You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
We are going to get this program back to where it deserves to be. And when we get there, you know, we're going to stay there because of the foundation that we're building. And that's what I'm excited about. You have the choice. This is your business. What do you want to invest your time in? I tell guys, man, if they don't like hard work, do not come here.
Yo, welcome to All Things Covered with Patrick Peterson and Bryant McFadden, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. The name says it all. If you like what you hear, make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. But check this out. You can also watch us on YouTube. Just go out and visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. So make sure you subscribe and turn on your alerts right away so you can get this show ASAP. Pat P., man, you know how we do it. Another big time show. What are we going to cover on this episode?
Got another amazing episode planned. This episode is going to serve as our official Vikings training camp segment. Also, we have to say goodbye to one of our favorite segments. And when we come back after break, we're going to chop it up with your head coach at your alma mater.
Florida State.
Yes, sir. Mike Norvell.
Norvell. Go Noles. Stay tuned. Got some important news we must continue to harp on and emphasize the awards plug. Guess what? Because of you guys, our fans, listeners, viewers, we've been nominated for 2 awards, nominated in 2 categories for the People's Choice Podcast Award. Yes, sir. Not even a year in existence. We're making big time news just by being nominated is a huge achievement, but we want to do more than that. Pat P didn't want to get drafted just to be an average cornerback. He wanted to be the best. I didn't get into the media game just to be an average analyst. I wanted to be the best. So guess what we did? We combined those skill sets to create this amazing platform for you guys to watch and listen to. And people are starting to really notice that we're pretty good at this thing. So yes, make sir. Sure you guys, it's only 60 seconds, man. We need you to help us get to the final round. Like I said, it takes less than 60 seconds to be exact to nominate All Things Covered. Go to the podcastawards.com/app/sign up. Or if you're watching us, if you're a fan of the show, you go to our Twitter bio, it's in the link. If you go to our Instagram bio, it's in the link. If you go to the actual show, when you go to scroll and hit on different shows, you will see in the top handle as well. So clearly there are many different ways for you to find what you need to do and go do it. So if you're really, really rocking with us, rock with us. Show us, give us your support. And Pat P, I'm just going to throw this out here. I know you probably didn't agree to it just yet, but if we do win one of these awards, Pat P is going to sign a Minnesota Vikings number 7 jersey. And we're going to pick a fan who can showcase and who can show us that they actually voted for us. And we're going to randomly select a fan and send them that jersey that Pat P is going to sign for that outstanding, awesome fan. So you know how they have the vaccination card. You got to show us, some type of, you got to have credibility. You got to be credible to show us that you actually voted for us. Right, Pat P?
No doubt about it.
For you to get that number 7 jersey. See, I got mine. I got the first one that, you know what I mean? So, but you might get the second or third. It might be a white when you get that Pat P number 7 signature on that. That's going to go a long, long way.
Yes, sir.
So you guys know what you got to do, but we got to win at least one. Go vote.
Go vote.
Now, first quarter of the show. You guys know what time it is. We chop it up. Chopping It Up segment. This is a very, very special segment for our very own Pat P. Pat P, he's not just a terror on the football field. This man's a terror in a good way on the golf course. A few weeks ago, he participated in the American Century Championship tournament where the who's of who was there. Listen, if you wasn't a big time guy, if you wasn't a big time personality, you couldn't get on the course. So you had to be a heavy hitter just to have a golf club in your hand, better yet to be able to be a spectator. But he was there. Tournament notes, our very own Pat P finished 23rd, one spot ahead of a divisional foe who could be a divisional foe or could be a non-divisional foe in Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Vinny Del Negro beat John Smoltz in a playoff to win. Only football players to finish ahead of Pat P, CBS own retired Tony Romo, Sterling Sharp.
Played with Sterling on Saturday.
Okay, on Saturday. Your teammate, Adam Thielen. You said Adam got a nice game, Pat P. Carson Palmer, Alex Smith. Only one of those guys is still active, and that's Pat P's teammate, Adam Thielen. Pat finished with an eagle on 18 on Sunday on his birthday. That's where you saw the clip that went viral. Pat P jumped into the water. I know he didn't have his phone on him because he was able to text me, so he must have put his phone down. Jumped into the water. But Pat P, man, give us a recap, man. How was it just being in that tournament, golfing with so many outstanding individuals, and seeing that you finished – you know, pretty good. You had a real good finish, man. Tell us about that experience.
Mac, I'm going to go back to the 18th hole real quick.
All right.
So I knew I was going to jump in the water, for one. If you look at the clip.
But you got to make it, right? So you're telling us.
I knew I was going to make it. Did you see me? I took my golf shoes off.
That is right. Okay. So your confidence was at all time high in making it.
Man, listen, because I had to make that putt. Man, Carson had a very, very healthy wager on the last hole.
What was that wager?
I can't put it out there, but just know your boy came through. Okay. So anyway, hit a nice drive on 18. I tell my caddy, because I'm like 150 out. I mean, I piped the drive. I had to hit about 340. So I had to go over a tree. So and it's a lake on the left-hand side, and it's like a little pond on the left-hand side and the lake on the right-hand side. The day before, I was in the same position, Matt. And I put that son of a gun on the beach. I had the perfect shot and put it on the beach. So Sunday comes around, like I said, in the same position. I got to hit like a nice high draw over this tree that's kind of protecting the green. And my caddy was like, man, you want to lay up today? I'm like, hell no, man. I got to get eagle right here, man. I got something on the line, man. I got to come through. I know I need an eagle to at least push the bet or at least win the bet. So anyway, like I said, I'm about 150. I hit a nice little smooth 9-9, hit it right over the tree. It falls about 7 feet short. So I'm walking up there like, Mike, I need this eagle, Mike. I really, really need this eagle, you know what I mean, for me to finish. Obviously, finish on a strong note. And obviously, because Carson, he was playing right behind me, too.
Oh, literally, so you're like the rabbit. Right, you know, he chasing you.
Yes, he's right behind me. So I'm like, Mike, we need this eagle on 7 feet. So it's me, Canelo. Man, who was? Oh, Brian McCann was our old-time Atlanta Brave. Mm-hmm. He was our third. So I put it close, like I said. So Canelo the day before had jumped in the water. No, he actually didn't jump in the water the day before. He made an eagle as well. He did his little signature knockout punch with the left hook.
Yep.
So, all right, I said, Canelo, if I make this eagle, I know I said, when I make this eagle, we all jumping in the lake. And I was like, hell yeah, sure, I'm all in. So as they told me they was all in, I started taking off my shoes as my caddy, Mike Magical, reading the putt.
So, Pat P, check this out real quick. You had a lot of pressure on you because you already gave the rest of the guys heads up, and you took your shoes off. So if you missed, man, you had egg on your face.
Listen, man, I was putting the ball well all day. Like, literally, I was hitting all of my line, just a couple of, in the early round, a couple of putts didn't fall. Yep. But I'm hitting the ball great. Like, I have so much confidence in my putter stroke. So I start taking off my shoes. That's Mike Magical, my caddy. He's reading the putt. Taking off my shoes. Took everything out of my pocket. Gave it to him. I said, Mike, we making this putt, and we jumping in the lake. He's all right. Line up the putt. Like I said, it's about 7 feet. Boom. As soon as I hit it, I knew I was going to make because I started looking at it, making sure it was going to turn at the right angle that I looked of where I measured it to turn at.
Yeah.
Man, that sucker went in. I didn't even watch the ball go in the hole. I turned off running right before the ball went in the hole, jumped in the lake. It was the greatest birthday present from the golf gods that I have ever received. I mean, it was unbelievable. The energy was phenomenal. Yes. And like I said, the fact that Carson was right behind me, so he had to wait. Because like I said, we had already jumped in the lake. We left everything on the green, our bags, our shoes. So we jumped in the lake, obviously, you know, congratulating me, everybody congratulating me and everything. Then I don't think they showed it. But now I'm running all soaking wet back on the green, grabbing everybody's bags, everybody's shoes to get it off the green so Carson and his group could find the finish. But that was that was by far my my greatest moment in all of my years at the American Century.
I was going to ask. I was going to ask you because I know you participate in that event every year. But clearly you just answered that question. Just that moment alone and just so many people capturing it. You see the fans, everybody kind of just moved out of the way. They kind of parted like the Red Sea for you to get to the lake and seeing everybody just jump in with you. You know what I mean? So, but like I said, that was a lot of pressure because if you don't make it, you got egg on your face.
Mac, I knew I was making it, Mac. I took my shoes off before I even jumped in the lake. Before I even, but while I'm walking up there, I started unlacing my shoes. Because I always wanted to jump in the lake anyway. And you, when you make an eagle on 18, it's kind of like the thing to do.
Yeah.
To
jump it's in the like lake. An unwritten rule. That's something you got to do.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Then,
gotcha.
Then next thing you know, I heard Steph Curry came right behind me in eagle. Three groups later.
And he jumped in the lake as well.
I don't know if he jumped in the lake, but I know last year he jumped in the lake when he made an eagle there. So I'm not sure. But overall, the weekend was unbelievable. I had my family there. My girls was there with me, cheering me on, my wife, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law. It was just an unbelievable weekend because like every year, for some odd reason, my birthday falls on the week of the American Century. So it's always a great tournament. It's always a great turnout. And to have the fans back this year made it that much more incredible.
And you said something that was very, very important, I think, for my ears. You said last year, Steph Curry jumped in the lake and this past basketball season, as an individual, Steph Curry put up some real hellified numbers.
Yeah.
So if that same juju can follow his footsteps as an individual, you jumped in the lake this year, maybe that lake. Because he was in the MVP conversation for quite some time, put the team on his back and he was carrying. So let's see if that same lake, that juju can follow you. Yeah, no question.
Because
if it do, you just jump in the lake anyway. Next year, when you go back in 2022,
I can make a birdie. I'm gonna jump in the lake.
Yeah, just jump in. Just jump in.
I'm gonna jump in the lake.
Yeah, but it was a phenomenal event, man. You know, I got Pat P. He's a terror on the golf course, man. And if you guys haven't seen the clip, it's an unbelievable clip. Just the atmosphere, how electrifying it was. The energy. I mean, that's what golf is about. That's how you get more spectators to be more involved in golf. Seeing that type of energy.
No doubt about it. And the only thing I would say negative about that weekend is my Saturday round was so bad, man. I think I scored 6 points on Saturday, which was, I don't know what it was, because my hands was kind of slippery. I'm not making no excuses. And Sunday, I went and got me some baby powder. Oh, man, my hands were nice and dry. It was kind of humid up there, Saturday.
Yeah.
So my hands were a little bit sweaty on Saturday, and I played not very well. I shot an 81. I believe on Saturday, but I bounced back on Sunday, you know, capturing it up with a good solid round. I think I shot a 76, if I'm not mistaken, 76, 77. But it was a great tournament, man. I always loved that tournament. We, as players and celebrities, we called that our Masters.
Yeah, no
that's
question.
That's our Masters tournament.
No question, no question, no question. Well, shout out to American Century for another outstanding event. Like I said, it was a few weeks ago, but we finally got a chance to recap Pat P's finish, and he did well. The only active player that played better than Pat P was his teammate, Adam Thielen. So you know what, these two guys are going to have a nice little battle.
I told you.
You're going to have a nice little battle.
We talked about it last 2 weeks ago, I believe. Alan,
yeah, with Harrison
Adam,
on, right?
Yeah, Adam is probably a notch better than me, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
There we have it. There we have it. For all the Viking fans that have been following us, listening to us, watching us, this is your time to shine. This is the school check-in. School check-in. And I'm going to tell you this much. The next time we release a full episode, training camp will have begun for the Minnesota Vikings. Pat P is currently in Minnesota in his new pad. Vikings training camp breakdown. The practices start next Wednesday, which is the 28th. 28th through the 31st, no pads. The first padded practice is August the 2nd. They have a joint practice with the Denver Broncos on August the 11th and the 12th. The first preseason ball game will be against the Broncos, and I think that's in Minnesota, August the 14th. Football is here.
It is.
I mean, you got this week, you got the Steelers and the Cowboys reporting to camp early because they had the Hall of Fame game, and the remaining NFL teams report the following week. Man, football is here. Some recent Viking notes we have to hit on. Michael Pierce suffered a calf injury. Training camp availability is in doubt, but they're saying he should be ready to go by week one. Pat P, as an individual, you're a veteran, been around for quite some time. You know, what are your individual goals for training camp?
Honestly, Mac, I never really set training camp goals, you know, but for the most part, you know, every day I write myself a letter I write myself a few words every day just as a reminder. It's an opportunity to get better, be better and get better. That's my message to myself after every practice, after every film session I watch, even if it's a bad film session or a good film session. Be better, get better. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to be better and willing to get better, you're going to be where you want to be at the end of the year. You know, you're going to end up being where you want to be when it's all said and done. So, you know, my goal is obviously, you know, continue bringing up these young guys, continue being Pat P. You know, I feel like I had a great OTAs, mini camp, feel real confidence with the defensive scheme. I'm just ready to play ball. You know, like you said, football is here. You know, this time of the year, I always get very anxious because, you know, it's nothing like being on the gridiron with the guys, you know, putting that work in with your teammates, fighting for that one common goal. And that's obviously collecting enough wins to get in the playoffs and to win a championship. You know, I felt like we took some strides this OTAs and minicamp. A lot of guys are very in tune with this upcoming season. A lot of guys have a lot of enthusiasm about the season. So I'm excited to see how this training camp is going to go. But my main goal for myself is to get better and be better.
No question. When you look at the team goals, you know, this is your first stint with the Minnesota Vikings. I know for me, when I became a vet, you know, there were certain things that I looked for in the team collectively. You know what I mean? For us, when it comes to continuity, the chemistry on both sides of the football, just the depth, you know, are there anything you're watching in totality with the team, you know, during training camp, throughout training camp?
For sure. I definitely want to continue to see just the morale continue to build, just the energy that we have, just always have that. Like I remember BH to always say, we don't need none of that fake juice. You know, we don't need no fake juice. We want guys that's coming there to work and really dialed in each and every day. You know, guys taking care of one another, being brothers keepers. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you're only good as the man next to you.
So no question.
We want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. Everybody is locked and dialed in because it's a long season and we're going to need everybody at some point. Every guy that's on that roster at some point is going to play. You know what I mean? I tell all the young guys, I remember my young guy, Jace, last year in Arizona, just very, you know, he was undrafted, came from Arizona, University of Arizona. He came in, he was like, man, you know, just very frustrated. I'm like, bro, be patient. Trust me. You're going to get your time.
Better be ready.
No doubt about it. When that time comes, you have to be ready. So my biggest thing is making sure these young guys are ready, making sure the guys, the backups, make sure they not only understand their role, but also understand what they mean to the team. Mm-hmm. Because once a starter or a guy in front of you goes down, we can't have no drop off.
Nope.
We gotta be able to trust you. We gotta be able to believe in you that you can go in there and get the job done. So my main thing is continue building these guys' confidence. That's backed up, and also having these young guys and, you know, the guys who are backing up starters understand that, you know, don't get in your feelings, because at some point you're gonna play. Then when you do play and mess up, whose fault is that?
Yeah, your fault.
So always be ready.
No question. I can tell you the one thing that I'm watching for the Vikings, with the Vikings during training camp, the cornerback battle opposite of you, Pat P. You got Cameron Dantzler, who I love, coming out of Mississippi State. Yeah. He will be in year two. You brought in Breshad Breeland. I don't know exactly the status of Jeff Gladney, who played pretty good football last year. First rounder, if I'm not mistaken. He was a first rounder last year.
Yeah. But
right now, you look at the cornerback battle opposite of you. That's going to be an intriguing battle. You know, I love the length of and the athleticism of Cameron Dantzler. You love the experience that Breshad Breeland will provide as well. Yep. So that's going to be a unique battle. And then also the development of Irv Smith. This is year three, I think, for Irv Smith, former second-round selection out of Alabama. Talent is there. The potential is there. Now it's time for him to take flight and take off. Rudolph is no longer there. He's more athletic than Rudolph. He just needs to be able to be more consistent. But I think this is going to be a huge, huge year for Irv Smith, not just because of his individual skill set that I just highlighted, Pat P, but you look at the offense, right? You got a running back who is a star in Dalvin Cook. You got an up-and-coming star in Justin Jefferson, and you got a guy who's nothing but a red zone nightmare for most opposing defenses in Adam Thielen, not to mention he's a guy that can move the chain and very, very consistent in the offense. So you really can't devote a lot of attention to Dalvin. If you do, you're going to give opportunities for Thielen and Justin Jefferson. So Irv will have matchups in his favor.
Yeah.
He just got to cash in. I think he will. So these are things that I'm going to monitor from afar. And hopefully I get a chance to come up to Minnesota and be there in person. Maybe we can kind of do a little mini ATC show, All Things Covered show right there in Minnesota, right off the grass, man, get it popping. But we will see. But those are something that I'm watching out for. And I know the Viking fans, they're probably nodding their head as they listen to me or watch me because they're like, yo, yeah, Irv Smith, it's time for Irv to take off. Hey, Pat P, you've been in, this is year, what, 11?
11. Yeah, 11.
Give me your best training camp memory.
Whoa. Best training camp memory?
Yeah, funny memory, something that you probably never forget, you know, an experience.
I'll never forget when Michael Bidwell asked me to take his helicopter. So I believe it was training camp maybe 7 for me, if I'm not mistaken.
You took the helicopter and go where?
Just go. He wanted me to arrive to training camp in his helicopter. He just bought his new Italian helicopter. It was very tricked out. You know, it's like the top of the line helicopter. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to do it. I was like, heck yeah, I would do it. And, you know, it was like a 15-minute, you know, flight from Scottsdale over to Glendale. And, I took the helicopter ride over there, landed on a great lawn. Right there in front of the stadium. And that was probably my best memory because I would never thought I would have been like an Antonio Brown, you know, coming up to a training camp in a style that I came in. But I would probably say that was the best one, that my best training camp memory for sure.
Oh, man, I got a few.
What's your best training camp? And you've been there. You was there with Antonio, but I don't think he was coming in the Rolls Royces and all.
No, not then. He couldn't afford that then when I was there. I was only there with 2 years. AB, he couldn't get that then. Yo, my best training camp memory was probably one of my first welcome to the NFL moment. My rookie year, so we had a conditioning test. You know what I mean? So every year we had to run 14 40s, and you had to run the 40s in a certain time, and you had to be back at the starting line at a certain time. So whatever you ran the 40 in at the combine, they wanted you to run, let's say if you run a 4.4, you had to run in the mid to high 4.6s, that 40 to hit before the buzzer hits. And you had to be right back at the starting point less than 25 seconds or something like that. It was a battle. So, but for me, I felt like I was training real good. I was working out on the beach, running barefoot on the sand. I thought I was in tip-top shape. I'm like, man, these old farts can't really mess with me. I'm fresh out of college. You know how you feel when you're fresh out. You're like, man, these old boys can't mess with me. Man, so Pat P, my first five, so we had run 14. So we had 7 and 7. Man, my first four, I'm first. I'm killing everybody. So, you know, I didn't know how to pace myself. I just wanted to show people I had my shirt off, my abs all chiseled. Man, I had to let people know I've been working out. Like, I'm ready. Man, I came out. I'm running. So I'm in my homeboy. My rookie year. This is the fresh out the gate. Fresh out. So you already know how I'm feeling. I'm fresh out. I'm like, ladies and boys, no, I ain't playing around, man.
Pace yourself, Philip.
And listen, Pat, be the first one hit. I hit the line first. I'm jogging back. I'm at the start point before everybody else. I'm like, man, these boys are slow. Man, they ain't tripping. I'm like, this is easy. The second one, the same thing. I remember Hope say, hey, Matt, boy, you better chill out. I said, no, I got this. I'm good. We got to the fifth one, the same thing. Well, when we got to that 7, I said, shoot, the hamstring kind of tightened up a little bit. I said, hey, it got hotter. I'm like, man, what's going on? We got to that 8, that 9. I said, boy, I said, man, them boys kind of gaining on me a little bit. What's wrong? But I got to that 10.
Monkey on your back.
Oh, that back tightened up. And you know when you start feeling that lower back, because when you get to the start point where you can rest, you upright, all the way upright. You're trying to move around to find
an arch in your back.
Oh, man, that arch. I started running with that arch in my back. You know how it is when that dog chases you as a child, that head go all the way back. I said, oh, man. Hey, so we got to the 12. We got to number 11. I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm making it. I'm like, Mac, what's wrong? So you know how it is, Pat. Anytime you do a conditioning drill, you don't never want to kneel down or take a knee. They always tell us to stand up. Ain't no air down there. Right. Man, Pat, when I got to that 12 and I finished that 12, man, I laid out. Somebody done shot him. when I got to the finish point, I just like, Mac, man, we not done. Get up. So, and get this, Bill Cowher is the guy who has the freaking horn. So he's seen everything. Like, Mac, man, get up, man. Get up. What you doing? Like, man, I don't know if I can get it. Like, Mac, don't quit. Man, them last two. Long story short, the first 3 days of practice, I was on the ice bucket.
Right.
Lower back spasm, ham tight. Man, I couldn't do anything. No 1440 sat me down.
I want to know who came up with that logic that it ain't no air down there.
I don't know. That's weird. It's air everywhere. Don't bend down, no air down there. Why it feels like it's air down here, though?
No doubt about it.
And it feels so good. Don't it feel like you get more energy when you bend down?
I'm trying to tell you, feel like you recuperate much faster.
Man, it feel like, man, you take a knee or you take a, you know what I mean? Is the air feels much better down there than up there when you're running. So I'm right there with you. It might be a sports cliche, but I know it's a football cliche. And it's air down there, coach. Stop lying to these players talking about ain't no air down there. There's a lot of air.
There's definitely some air down there.
I agree. We all know that firsthand. When you're out here running your conditioning drills, stand up and bend down. Mm-hmm. Let's see which one feels better.
Mm-hmm. you're gonna get more relief on your back.
No question. And no
I feel like when you just down there, I just feel like everything just gather up much faster when you're standing up. You just feel like you're panicking when you're standing up.
Man, you feel like you can't get enough air. Right. You feel like you can't get enough air. Then the lower back go to tight. When that lower back get tight, you can cancel Christmas. It's over. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's a wrap. Ha! Now it's time for our favorite part of the show. But before we get to our favorite part, make sure you guys stay tuned, stay with us. A little later in the show, we will be joined by Florida State Seminoles head coach Mike Norvell will be joining us. So make sure you stay tuned. But now, Pat P, has Pat heard?
It's my segment, baby.
His segment. Pat's record so far, 43 of 65. Out of 65 questions, he's gotten 43 right. That winning percentage is 66%. Stories that he's heard before, we told him. So he's been doing a pretty good job, clearly above 500 with his correct answers. But we have some breaking news for you guys. Some breaking news, Pat P. This will be the final edition of Has Pat Heard of 2021.
Why is that?
Because you're about to get ready in the season. This was more of an off-season type thing. You know what I mean?
Okay, so you're heading back to camp.
You're gonna be on dry land, so you ain't gonna be moving around. You know, be in the sky, on the ocean.
Y'all might get me this week because I've been out of the country for 8 days.
Yeah, we're gonna get you. We know the committee came up with some great questions. So if we got you, we confident.
I can't wait to hear them.
We're gonna bring this back. And we're gonna do this for our listeners and our viewers. You know, if you wanna give us a new segment to implement for Has Pat Heard since we're moving this because he's about to get in the season, let us know. You know, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram, Facebook. Let us know what you think. But for right now, Pat P, I don't know if he's confident enough to take his golf shoes off for this one to jump in the lake because I don't know if he thinks he's gonna make this putt. Number one, first question for you: which NFL player will accept all future endorsement money in Bitcoin?
I did hear this. It was two of them. It's either, hold on, rephrase that question one more time.
Which NFL player will accept all future endorsement money in Bitcoin?
Trevor Lawrence.
Mm.
No,
that's not the one I have.
Damn. Is it Saquon Barkley?
Yo.
I know. Those are two names I had. Because I remember hearing my man, he just signed a deal. I can't remember who it was with. But he wanted all of his money to be in Bitcoin. And I did see that Saquon Barkley was going to do that. I didn't know. Yeah. That's why I want you to rephrase that question.
So, and
that's
you
why
know
I
what?
Want you to rephrase that question.
And Trevor Lawrence, he's getting his signing bonus
signing bonus in Bitcoin.
And get this, Russell Okung, I'm sorry, who played for the Panthers last year, he received half of his salary, which was $13 million, I think it was, in Bitcoin. And get this, at the highest point in Bitcoin's tenure last year, he turned that $13 million, well, right. Bitcoin turned that $13 million into $21
million. Yeah, I saw that.
So if he converted at his highest point when he hit $21 million, if he converted that back to American dollars, he made some nice money. He made an extra, what, $8 million. So I don't know if he left it there. Because, you know, Bitcoin is not as high as it once was, you know, especially over a year ago. But, I mean, he made some money. So I would think he converted it back to American dollars to be able to reap some of the benefits of that increase.
But we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. But Saquon will accept future endorsement money in Bitcoin. And Trevor Lawrence will accept his entire signing bonus in Bitcoin. Okay, you got that one right, Pat P. So let me ask you this
one. Let's go.
What injury was Tom Brady reportedly dealing with all
MCL.
Last season?
MCL.
Okay. All right.
I did see that one.
Do you think the Bucs should be punished for not disclosing that injury?
No.
Well, I think they probably will be punished because you know,
saw that.
Disclose. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. But I don't think they should be punished, but they definitely are going to get punished.
Yeah. Well, okay, you got that one right. We got you right here. Which former first-round pick and former teammate of yours just retired after 14 years?
Take in. Let's go.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. He played 1 year with you out in Arizona, right?
He did. Hey, man, I think I was in the sky, but God, dog, I was tuned in, Matt.
Well, give me this one then. Who is the fastest player you ever went up against or ever seen on the field?
Trendon Holiday, by far.
Oh, yeah.
That boy, I remember my freshman year. So my freshman year, we got Demetrius Byrd,
yep,
Trendon Holiday, Brandon LaFell, Chris Mitchell. And I can't remember the other Mitchell first name, but he ended up playing baseball. It started with a D. I cannot remember his name right now. But he ended up playing for the White Sox. So he got drafted by the White Sox. Mm-hmm. But that was our receiving core, right? So coming into my first training camp as a freshman at LSU, you know, everybody be like, man, Trendon Holiday fast, man. I'm telling you, fab. I'm like, you know, I'm fast too. You know what I mean? Man, Trendon Holiday, I was playing. It was like an 87 defense, which is like a quarters and a man-to-man defense. So yep. Quarters on the strength, man-to-man on the back on the weak side.
Yep.
So I'm man-to-man on the weak side with no safety help. Man, when I say Trendon ran past me, that sucker ran past me.
Did they throw him the ball?
Yes, they threw him the ball. And he was about 3 yards ahead of me. Because I'm off already. Because so the biggest thing with Trendon, if he had a press, obviously they weren't throwing the ball because he couldn't get off press very well.
Yeah.
But when he was off, just run deep, Trendon. And when I say he ran past me, Mac, I ain't getting no hands on him. me, he already running full speed, and I'm backpedaling. As soon as I turn and run, as soon as I open up the gate, man, I look back at that sucker about 3, 4, 5 yards in front of me, man, flying. I said, you know what? I'm not playing off on this joker. Nope.
Better try to get them hands on him, slow down.
No doubt about it, baby. No doubt about it. Put that big body on him.
Man, the fastest, man, shoot, that's a tough one. Why? The fastest?
Hey, did you play with Mike Wallace?
Yes. We had to see that in practice.
Hey, Mike Wallace was a fast joker, too. I had to see Mike Wallace my freshman year too when he was at Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, yes. Ooh. I tell you to tell Mike all the time, he was stupid fast. The thing about Mike Wallace, he didn't have no proper form. His arms were everywhere. His legs were going everywhere. He ain't really got no calf muscles. And you know how you can tell a fast guy when you see him walking, that vein popping out that calf, you're like, oh shit, he can go. You know, or they walking on their toes, you know what I'm saying? Right. You know, you can tell somebody who got, you know, kind of fast based on their stature. Mike ain't had none of that.
Hey, I remember I made a headline on the Dan Patrick Show when the Super Bowl is in San Francisco. I can't remember what year that was. But they was asking me about speed. And I said, Mike Wallace and DeSean Jackson got crackhead speed, man. Like you said, they got no form. They just running. Fastest get out, all get out.
We played against DeSean Jackson his rookie year. And of course, you kind of know who got drafted where. So we like, mm-hmm. okay, they got this second round guy out of Cal. That's supposed to be fast. You know, we like, oh, everybody fast in this league, man. We not right. seeing him. And this was the young, super light DeSean. Man, right. he went out there and ran a post. I came back to the sideline. I said, listen, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be in the game. But before y'all boys do get in the game, number 10 can go. Don't play around. Don't play around with him. You in that situation, you want to open early than late. Because if you try to time it, and open a little late, Coach LeBoy still is on time. They even, they leaving. I don't care how fast you are, son. I don't care what they say you run. When they even, they're leaving. You better understand that. But Mike, yeah, Mike was super fast. But Chris Johnson, Lord have mercy.
Hey, Chris Johnson. Yeah, I played against. I never played. Well, matter of fact, I did play against. I'm trying to think. I might have played against Chris Johnson in 2014. If he was still there. I think he was kind of in and out of the lineup at that time.
That Chris Johnson?
Yeah.
And the crazy part about Chris Johnson was the Steelers almost drafted Chris Johnson. The thing that hurt Chris Johnson in getting drafted by the Steelers, he had a neck issue. No, he broke his neck at East Carolina. And that's why, he has that twitch.
He got that twitch, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they were afraid of the neck injury, especially with our style of play.
With a running back.
Yeah, so instead of getting Chris Johnson, we went Rashawn Mendenhall. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, and we did some good things with Mendenhall. But if you could imagine Chris Johnson with us.
Hey, your boy Parker was a little bit like Chris Johnson, but a little bit bigger, though.
Fast Willie was fast. Mm-hmm. He was easier at 4'2". Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I'll probably say Chris Johnson, man. That Chris Johnson, man, he just it was like he was floating.
Right.
He was just a floater when he was, so you got some guys who are hard runner, some guys mm-hmm. who are smooth. He was just floating. I don't like playing against fast guys that float because you can't really determine when they're actually trying to run fast.
Right.
Exactly. Everything looks the same. You know what I mean? So, like a DK Metcalf, he's a strong runner. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when a guy is a floater, they can just sneak scary. Up on you. Oh.
That's how Ted Ginn is too, though. Ted Ginn is a floater.
He's a floater.
But he be riding though.
Yeah, when you know how it is. When you play DB, you can kind of tell. Look at a guy like, oh, he's a strong runner, but I know he's fast. But you can tell when he's putting in high gear. I don't want that guy who just floats.
Yeah,
because everything looks the same.
You can't tell
nothing. No question.
DeSean Jackson the same way. He just float.
All right, this is the last question for you. Final question for Haspat.
Let's go 100%, Pete. Let's go 100%, Pete.
What is the official name of LeBron James' new movie? The official name.
What?
The official name of LeBron James' new movie.
I don't know that one, man.
How you don't get this one? This is the easy one.
You talking about Space Jam?
Yeah, but what's the official name?
Space Jam, New Legacy.
Okay.
Space Jam 2, New Legacy. I thought you were talking about...
Huh? You're right. I don't know. We got to go to committee because he said something wrong. Committee.
All right. Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Did you just look up something?
No. 100%?
Dang. He got 100%.
Let's go. I'm going to retire on a good note, baby. Let's go.
He did. Until next year. Until next year, Pat P got all of them right. Committee. I thought we had them. Committee no, said sir. They had them. Fans said they had them.
You thought.
Past tense. Had.
Had.
100%. Last Haspat Herd. You guys heard it here. Hey, but let us know. We're going to take Haspat Herd out. Let us know what we should implement for Haspat Herd. What segment? What should it be called? How should we handle it? We all listening. Let us know.
Here we go, listeners and viewers. This 7 questions. Matter of fact, we're going to call this 20 questions. Because that was Mac number at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So,
yes, sir.
Here we go. We get a chance to interact with you, the listeners and viewers. If you want your questions answered in the future, make sure you leave a question attached to a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and we may get it on the show. This one is for, excuse me if I'm pronouncing your handle wrong, For Chibi.
From For Chibi. For Chibi.
For Chibi.
Yep.
I enjoy the show. Keep up the great job. My question as a Florida State fan since the 90s, B-Mac, what do you think about Coach Neuville and his recruiting this year with all the camps and Midnight Madness? I'm impressed with him so far. Do you think he's the guy to lead FSU back to greatness?
Ah, yeah, I'm impressed too with the recruiting. Florida State only won 5 games. And Pat P, you know about this as a former recruit and a fan of the game. You know, when you getting recruited by a team that didn't do well, you don't really give them the respect or the attention, you know what I mean, off top. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of takes some time. But seeing, you know, what he's doing, especially not with the success that we thought we would see last year, clearly he's a guy that can recruit. And that's the first sign of being successful in a college collegiate level. You got to be able to recruit. You got to be able to get people to buy in, not just players, but parents as well, guardians. So right. He's done a real good job in being creative to open different avenues for recruiting, especially during a year where there were so many restrictions, where you can't really have contact with players, prospects. You can't really have them visit you. You got to do a lot of things virtually. But he's been doing a great job, I think, right now for the class of 2022, based on the commitments, they're top 10, which is huge. You know, mm-hmm. They're top 10.
That's big.
To answer his second question, do I think he's the guy that can lead Florida State back to greatness? I believe so, but in due time as well. You know, that to be determined, to say the least. I think this is a very, very important year because you had a full offseason. Last year, you didn't have a full offseason. Not saying that was an excuse, but you get a chance to really get acclimated with the players, and the same could be said with the players getting acclimated to the new staff. So, but this is a gut check year. Expectations are always high at Florida mm-hmm. State. And the last few years have been really inconsistent. They've been inconsistent. So this is a gut check year. But so far, you know, I say when I look at college football, Pat P, the first element to being competitive and being consistent, you got to win in the recruiting world. You know what I mean? They had a real good class in 2021. They're off to a pretty good class in 2022. And then when you get these kids, you got to be able to develop them. Mm-hmm. So we won't know how well the developmental program is until we actually see it on film. But I can tell you this much, they've done a real good job in the weight room. You know, guys have gotten bigger, gotten stronger. They're testing well. They're looking better. You know what I mean? So that's the first thing you want to see leading up to game time, how these guys look. You know what I mean? You don't want to look the same way you did as a freshman. I'm pretty sure when you got to LSU, you gained muscle mass from freshman year, sophomore year, junior year. You know, that's a sign of a real good nutrition program, weight program. And I think we're starting to see that. So I do believe he will be able to get Florida State back to that consistency. You know, he has some big shoes to fill. The two coaches that were there before him more than 4 or 5 years all won championships, you know, and Bobby and Jimbo. So, you know, those are huge shoes to try to fill. But I think he's up for the task. But before you can win any ball games, you got to win on the recruiting road. And he's done so far. So I think so for Chibi. Thank you for being a Florida State fan. But I think he can get us back. And I'm ecstatic about what he's doing so far recruiting.
I think what's going to be the turning point for Florida State, you got to have good quarterback play. Because you're always going to have defensive players. You're always going to have the best of the best skilled players. It's going to come down to the quarterback putting the ball where it needs to be and crunch time moments, because we all know you can't run the ball 60 times and expect to beat nobody. No. You're going to have to make some throws and some decisions to move the chains. So it's going to come down to quarterback play, because Florida State is always, like I said, always going to have a DB, a linebacker, a rusher coming out of the draft. Do you got to think about it? They always have good linemen, running backs, and receivers. So the missing piece to me is going to be the guy who's calling the who's going to be slinging the rock around the around the yard.
And you know what Herm told us? If you don't have a quarterback that field 150 yards.
150 on every level.
On every level. Pop Warner, it don't even matter. If you ain't got no quarterback, man, that field's not 100 yards. Hey.
I'm trying to tell you, man, I don't care who you are.
I was wrong. I'm sorry. Florida State only won 3 games last year?
Oh, wow. That got to be one of the worst, Matt. I did, man. Dang, 3 games?
That makes that the recruiting job even that much more impressive. I thought it was five.
To win 3 games and be top 10 in the recruiting process, that's big. That just goes to show that Florida State still got the power to bring guys in.
And one of the I don't want to say main gets, but one of the top commitments is a kid by the name of Travis Hunter.
Oh, the corner.
The corner. He plays both ways. He's from Georgia. He's from Atlanta area, Georgia? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Okay. And I don't know if you saw 247 Sports. They came up with their best composite cornerback rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Travis Hunter number one as the best corner ever.
Yeah.
Number one. And they had – you were on that list. I think you were
– six, I think.
You were six or seven.
Maybe seven. Had,
and you know what? You know, I feel some type of way about 247 in their rankings. Pat, you were seven. But they had me 10. That's too low. And you know why that's too low?
I agree.
Because I'm the oldest one. Number one, I'm thankful to be on the list. You know what I mean? Right. That's a nice tribute. But I'm the oldest one. So remember when I came out of high school, the level of camps that you guys have currently, it wasn't there. I only went to one camp my junior year, was the Nike camp. Every other element that you guys have, like the 707 tournaments, the different camps where you can go, you can improve your status, I didn't have. So everything that I had by putting my paws on people during real live games.
I was just like you, Matt, because I didn't have that either. All I had was the Nike camps as well.
Yeah. So these kids can improve a star. I mean, with the blink of an eye. Like you, if I had the camps that some of these kids had, the way how I played, the same can be said for you, how you played. Oh, no question. Then when I saw it, I said, wait a minute, I'm ranked too low.
I agree. Hey, but like you said, Mac, I was grateful enough to be on there, man.
They had us on the list. They had us on the list, but we all things covered here. And I feel like 7 and 10, you know, but I can tell you this much. We got two Florida State guys on that list. And LSU got two guys too. You and Stingley.
Yeah. Another thing, I didn't even know Ted Ginn was a corner.
I forgot about that. I totally forgot about Ted Ginn. He was held as a cornerback. But my thing
is this.
He didn't play one. I don't know if he played one meaningful snap at corner in a game. But I forgot about that. A lot of people forgot that Ted Ginn was the top corner coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. He was ranked number two.
That was in 2000. Was that 5 or 6?
I want to say 5 or 6.
Yeah.
5 or 6. Because he was on that Ohio State team. Yep. That played Florida in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He was, I think he was a sophomore or a freshman that year.
And he returned that kick or that punt.
And messed up his ankle.
Messed up his ankle.
In Glendale. I've been watching that game.
Yep. In the Fiesta Bowl. But 247, man, listen. Yeah, I feel like y'all slighted me a little bit. I'm happy to be on the list. But 10, and I'm the father of the group because I'm the oldest. But my when I came out, man, we had to get it from the mud. No question. But we got two Florida State guys on there, Travis Hunter. You know, I don't know what the restrictions is, but it would be dope to kind of get Hunter on the show. And you know what? We got to get your guy Stingley on the show too.
Yeah. But hey, with this likeness thing in NCAA, I don't think it'll be a problem to get them guys on the show. We're just talking ball.
But Hunter's still in high school.
Oh, we can definitely get him on there.
We figure it out. You know what I mean? DB talk.
Do your work, Eric.
DB talk. Find out what we got to do, DB talk. You know what I mean? Get DB talk on there. But we definitely get Stingley on the show. And he rocking at number 7 this year.
Yes, sir. That thing clean on that boy, too. And he just went to the end. So my boy Stingley just went to the last corner to go to the SEC Media Day, one to Jim Thorpe from LSU. No doubt about it. So I'm expecting my guy Stingley to win a Jim Thorpe this year. That's a bold prediction. No, in fact, that's not even a bold prediction. That is a guaranteed prediction. If Stingley do what he need to do this year, he will be the Jim Thorpe winner this year.
So you saying Stingley the best corner in college football coming up?
Did I stutter?
Mm-mm. I just want to know. Hey, I tell you this, Florida State got a good one too. Brownlee. Ooh. Jarvis Brownlee.
I did hear about Jarvis. I did hear about
We got a few good ones down there, but Stingley got the national hype. The pressure going to be on. Anytime you put in number 7 on at LSU and you in the secondary, they're going to watch you differently.
No doubt about it.
They're going to watch you differently.
Hey, that eye in the sky don't lie. They got to be watching them, baby.
Hey, college football right around the corner. Boy, I'm excited.
Woo! Yes, sir.
It's going to be a fun football year. Hey, but appreciate that question. And you know what? We're going to try to – Eric got to do some due diligence to see about this young kid, T. Hunter. Man, we get him on the show. We got to get Stingley on the show, have some DB talk. Yeah, it's halftime for us. But on the other side of the break, Florida State fans, stand up. We'll be joined by head coach Mike Norvell. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Ladies and gents, we're back from halftime. You guys know how we rock. If you've been following the show, we go into halftime, make a few adjustments, and we had to make a huge adjustment to our staff. Usually we bring in players, offensively, defensively, quarterbacks, wide receivers, DBs, but we had to go a step above the player standpoint, and we went and got a head coach. A head coach for me. I believe he's coaching the best university in the land. When you talk about college football, when you talk about tradition, when you talk about prestige, we have all of the above. And I might be a bit biased. Who cares? I played there. But we have right now the head coach for Florida State University, for the football club there in Tallahassee. Join us now. All things covered. Pat Pete, Brian McFadden. Coach Norvell is here with me. Coach, how you doing? And thank you for joining us.
Man, I appreciate it, Brian, and you know, just excited, man. We're a couple of weeks away from getting on the practice field and starting fall camp, and you know, it's an exciting time here in Tallahassee.
Oh, no question, and we will tap into this upcoming season, not just with Florida State, but college football in totality, man. It's going to be a different year from what we saw last year, and I think everybody's fired up right now about college football. But before we get into your coaching career, but before we get into Florida State, we have to mention your playing career, right? You're not a coach that never played the game. You're a coach that actually was in the line of fire at one point in time. You set all sorts of records at Central Arkansas as a wide receiver, and your game was once compared to the likes of Wes Welker. Is that a fair comparison when you talk about what Wes did at Texas Tech, what he did in the National Football League, compared to what you did when you were playing the game at the wide receiver position?
Well, let me tell you, I was good at finding zone coverage. Let me tell you that. I love the game. I love playing the position of receiver and just all the things technically and, you know, skill set that you got to possess there. It was a great time for me. I enjoyed the process. You know, there's nothing like going out to a practice and getting in one-on-ones and just every day competing to be your best. And it was something that helped really accelerate me into my coaching career. And, I'm grateful for that time, but I don't know if I'm on that stage of it. I tried to make the most all that I had, and I'm very pleased with what I was able to do as a player.
Hey, Coach, were you a trash talker? Do you like talk trash to DBs? You know, if you get them with a 1-2 move or catch a nice pass on them, did you say anything, or were you just a more of a silent assassin, to say the least?
I'll say that every receiver's got to have a little dog in him. So I like to talk just a little bit back in the playing days.
No doubt. And we see that same fire from you on the sideline now as a head coach. And you talked about the process. When your playing days were over, you decided to get into coaching. What did it mean to have someone that believed in you, like Todd Graham believed in you, being able to allow you to follow him every stop he made? I mean, you were with him at Tulsa. You were with him at Pittsburgh. You were with him at Arizona State. What did your relationship you had with Coach Graham mean to you when they came to getting in the coaching life?
Well, you know, I was so very grateful. My first year of coaching, I actually GA'd at Central Arkansas, where I played at. And, you know, I really didn't know anybody in the coaching profession. You know, it's a business of who you know. And but I was fortunate that Coach Malzahn, who was actually Coach Graham's offensive coordinator at Tulsa, you know, I was able to get connected with him, go over there and interview with him for a GA position. And I remember, I'll never forget my first time to sit down with Coach Graham, and he was a former high school coach. He had actually played small ball, was a former All-American, you know, there, you know, in small ball football, you know, in college, but he kind of had a very similar journey, and he was a self-made man. You got an opportunity to be a Division I head coach. And, you know, I think he understood the passion that I had. You know, all I wanted was an opportunity. And if I felt like if I got my foot in the door, you know, if I was able to show the right work ethic, you know, that passion, that intensity, and doing things to the standard of what I wanted, you know, to be represented as, that I would do a job well done for him. And to be able to go on that journey, like you mentioned, I was with him for 9 years. And, you know, at every stage, you know, I was able to get, you know, a promotion, more responsibility, you know, a bigger role. And, you know, it was a great run that we had together. You know, we still stay in touch. You know, he's a head coach out at Hawaii now, and you know, Gus Malzahn, who's down at UCF. I mean, I still stay in touch with those guys, you know, on a regular basis because of those experiences and the relationships that we were able to build.
Yeah, and talking about the experiences you had with Coach Graham in 2011, you were helping out with the offense there at the University of Pittsburgh, right? And during that year, on that team, they had a stud sophomore by the name of Aaron Donald. A guy who clearly is the best defensive player in the National Football League. I think he's the second best player in the National Football League. Depending on who you're asking, they may say he's the best. But do you remember any standout moments from Aaron Donald? Because you saw him in practice a lot. Do you remember any standout moments from him early on in his collegiate career that kind of pinpointed to him being the dominant player that he is currently?
You know, I mean, his work ethic, his strength, I mean, just the approach that he brought every single day to be great is what I'll always remember about him. And, you know, he really didn't say a whole lot. I mean, he came to work. You know, he tried to let his actions speak louder than any words he needed to say. And I mean, it was, you know, his career speaks for itself. But you know, I tell guys all the time, you know, I got a chance to see him very early in his collegiate career, and I mean, he was already separating himself by just what he was willing to invest. You know, everybody talks about wanting to be a great player, but who's willing to invest to what it takes to be that type of player? And you know, plenty of people probably have told Aaron what you know he couldn't do, but he wasn't worried about listening to it. He was just too busy investing on what it took to go out there and get it done. And you know, he is a joy to watch. You know, I was grateful for the time that I got the experience to be a part of a staff that I got to see him day in and day out. And you know, he was a remarkable player. He's a remarkable man, and you know, just excited about the success that he's had throughout his career and the example that he is.
Now, Coach, back in 2015, the University of Memphis decided to make you the youngest coach in college football. I think you were 34 years old at that time. What was the biggest adjustment you had to make in becoming a head coach?
Well, you know, I think it's when you make that jump, it's just the importance of every decision that, you know, everybody's looking to you. You know, the reality hit me. I'll never forget my first day. You know, you go in, you have the press conference, you know, they're basically just standing up on a stage and say, go. It is now your program. It is now your vision. What are you looking to do? What is this program going to look like? But I remember shortly after that press conference, you know, I come in the office and my administrative assistant asked me, coach, what time do you want me to come in tomorrow? What time do we start? And that is the moment where you realize, man, every decision that I make is going to impact the livelihoods of all those around us. And you think about what's done on the field, but it's the organizational approach, the investment in people and who they are, helping them develop on their career. That's the thing that I've loved about the position. But, you know, I tried throughout my coaching career from when I was a GA all the way up to being a coordinator. I tried to approach each day being the best that I could be at my position and my role and my responsibility, but always tried to do more, preparing myself for that next step. And so during the days that I was an offensive coordinator, I tried to prepare as if I was the head coach. And so I think that, you know, and being under a guy like Coach Graham, who gave me those opportunities with media and being around boosters, and I thought that helped me, you know, kind of accelerate the process and be, you know, as well prepared as I could be when I did get that opportunity. And like I said, I'm forever grateful for that. But, you know, it's just it's that daily impact that you get to make is what makes my job so special.
And I can tell you this much, during your tenure there at Memphis, you had some talented players that you were able to bring into the program and you developed them. And Memphis low-key has done a real good job in producing NFL-like players, the pros, right? You look at some of the quality NFL talent, I mean, a laundry list of running backs, Darrell Henderson, who's probably going to get a lot of opportunities because of the unfortunate injury to Cam Akers, Tony Pollard, Kenneth Gainwell, who I love, do-it-all offensive weapon, Antonio Gibson for the Washington Football Club, and wide receiver Anthony Miller for the Chicago Bears. When you look at these guys and look at the success that they're having at the highest level, and knowing that you had a hand to play in their development on the collegiate level, how does that make you feel?
It means everything. And knowing that, you know, everybody talks about wanting to get to the next level. Yeah, man, I don't want guys just to get there. I want them to stay there. I want when they get the opportunity that they can be prepared for that opportunity. And, you know, obviously the list of running backs, you know, all Americans, guys that played at a very high level, like Anthony, Darrell, I mean, Kenneth, AJ, I mean, all those guys, they were special players, but, you know, they're also special young men, and their work ethic, the passion of what they brought, you know, you, the guys that don't get mentioned that are still, like, you know, the Bryce Huff, who was an undrafted free agent, Jannard Avery, a fifth round pick. Those guys have made NFL careers now, and maybe they weren't as heralded, but when they still got their opportunity, they went there and they got, and they stayed. And it wasn't, that's what, you know, that I get as much pride out of that as the guys that were the high draft picks as well, because it's about the process. It's about what you do within your program at the collegiate level. That's going to prepare guys to be successful when they get to their dream and they get their opportunity, because, you know, I mean, you know how short lived that can be. And, you know, I just want guys to walk in with confidence because of what they did throughout their collegiate experience that prepared them to have success at the highest level. And those guys are living that dream now. And, you know, once again, I was just grateful to have that opportunity to help them along that way.
Coach, I'm going to put you on the spot right quick. You know, you talk about the running backs you were able to coach at Memphis that went on to have pretty nice professional careers. If you had to go to war with one running back out of the names I mentioned, Darrell Henderson, Tony Pollard, Kenneth Gainwell, Antonio Gibson, who you picking and why?
I don't know if I can be put on a spot like that. I mean, hey, we had five of them, and you're not even mentioning Patrick Taylor, who's with Green Bay too. And
I forgot Patrick.
Yeah, you sit there and we had five NFL backs on one team, on one roster, and we had to be unique. We played Antonio Gibson, we played Kenneth Gainwell, they played a lot of receiver and mm-hmm. be able to mix them up. So, I'll just go ahead and take them all. And, you know, that's what we're looking to build in here at Florida State and bringing the best playmakers to be able to showcase all of that within the offense. I'm not going to give you that one today. I'm going to go with all of them.
Well, if you take all, we know you're going to win a lot of ball games. You're going to score a lot of points. I know that much. And, you know, speaking of Florida State, that's a nice segue into the Florida State topic of our show with you, conversation with you. At one point in your life, you dreamed of just being a high school coach. Right. So you go from just having the big dreams of being a high school coach to coaching on Fridays in high school stadiums to now coaching at Florida State. But what was the very first thought you had when Florida State approached you with their head coaching vacancy?
Well, you know, I was humbled, and, you know, just to have the opportunity to be able to sit down and talk about, you know, what I believe that this can be. And, you know, it's what it's been. And I'll never forget, I grew up in Dallas, Texas. And when I was 12 years old, the very first piece of college memorabilia I ever owned was a 1993 national championship license plate that sat on my wall from here at Florida State. And to have guys like Work Done, Charlie Ward, Derek Brooks, I mean, those guys that, you know, their names were on that license plate. I remember because I was a fan, you know, even states away, but seeing the mentality of how that team played and just the you know, what this program stands for. And you know, you look at the sustained success that was had and with the teams that you played on, and just, you know, what it means to be a Florida State symbol is special. And, you know, I believe that to have the opportunity to lead this program, to help get us back to where we deserve to be and where this program needs to be. It's a humbling opportunity, but it's one that it's a responsibility that I absolutely do not take lightly. And I know who and what I represent and the standard of what we need to operate.
And talking about the standard, last year was a very difficult year. There were a lot of adversities that were faced on and off the football field. But your first rookie campaign as the head coach there at Florida State, first year, what was the low point of the entire season, you would say?
Well, I mean, to say that the experiences that we had were all things that we had to go through. And, there's a lot of people that can point to all the circumstances that we faced. And, you know, I'm not worried about the circumstances. I thank God that he brought me for this year, this opportunity, you know, the things that we had to work through. It was an opportunity for me to put on display to our players, you know, what it is to go through that adversity, how you're supposed to respond, what you're supposed to do to continue to work, to continue to push, to not lower the standard just for a short-term success, but to set it up to build a foundation for something that when we achieve that success, we're going to stay there and we're going to be able to sustain it. And so, you can look to a lot of experiences that we faced that were challenging, that were hard. It's things that I quite frankly don't ever want to have to go through again, but I'm glad we had to go through it so that we could go through it together and to build that camaraderie and that trust of, you know, what our coaches are asking our players to do and what our coaches are willing to put on display day in and day out to help our players, you know, achieve to the level that we believe that they're capable of. And so, to say a low point, I mean, there's, you know, that I think they were all needed experiences, and I'm grateful for each and every one of them we had. And it's made us stronger and helped us to where we are today as we start year two.
And talking about, you know, experiences that you needed to go through, you had a great experience. And I think you got your signature win out of the way early in your tenure there in Tallahassee. Describe the emotions of getting that huge win over North Carolina. At that time, I think they were ranked fifth in the country. No one gave you guys a shot, and you just balled out. Had a real nice game plan for four quarters, were able to execute, especially on the offensive end. But describe the emotions you were feeling, not just you, the entire staff, the entire team, being able to knock off the number five team in the country at that time.
Well, you know, there was a lot of joy throughout that evening, and the preparation, what our guys were, you know, invested, you know, throughout that week, and then, you know, the way that we were able to go out there and execute. We probably played one of the best halves of football I've ever been a part of, and then, you know, in all reality, in the second half, there were some things that you know, we made some mistakes, they made some plays, and you know, we had to try to do everything in our power to sustain to finish, but. You know, that there were still things in that game that, you know, even winning and having the victory over a top five opponent that we can still point back to today where, you know, there's areas that we had to grow. And, you know, there was things that, you know, were great for that evening that didn't carry over good for the next couple of weeks, but it was a part of our process. And, you know, yeah, I'll forever remember, that night, because that was special. It, you know, nobody gave us a chance to win that game, but we showed that we can. And, but it was still to us. I mean, there's a lot of things that we could have improved on even in that evening that, you know, for us to play to the level that I believe that we're capable of and we're capable of, but, you know, you take that and you continue to grow off of it. And, you know, as we saw that kind of you matriculate throughout the season, right? You know, our guys, they understand that standard and what we're pushing for, what we're looking to do and what we're looking to be, because they do have an example of being able to look back that we could and we can. And, you know, we're excited about the opportunities that we're going to have moving ahead just to continue to build the foundation of what we're doing.
No doubt. And coach, you're an offensive-minded coach. You know what I mean? You're a football coach, but you know you kind of cater to the offensive side. And I know how defenders feel about that, because we know you always kind of hovering around the offense because that's your specialty. In every great offense, they have great quarterbacks. And this is a heated competition you will be involved in and watching throughout summer ball leading into fall camp. What should we know about this quarterback competition as you guys get ready for the season between McKenzie Milton and Jordan Travis?
Well, I do got to tell you, Brian, that I spend every practice over there standing in the defensive secondary. I will say thank you very much.
Just so okay, you know, okay. That, well, put me on game, coach. Put me on game.
Field. I mean, just, you know, I know COVID, you weren't able to get out to some practice, but hey, come on. Okay. You know, I love it. I do have to be transparent that part of that is so I can always watch those quarterbacks' eyes. I'm excited. I'm excited about the room that we have and, you know, really the growth that we've seen. You got a guy like Jordan Travis who got tremendous experience last year, you know, battled through so many injuries and, you know, really was limited in the weeks that he was available just to practice. And, you know, seeing his growth here this spring, bringing able able to bring in a guy like Mackenzie Milton, who is an absolute stud in everything that he does. I mean, you know, I think he's won 23 straight games as a starting quarterback in college football. The leader that he is, you know, within the team, and the teammate that he works to be, and just building those relationships. It's exciting to see these guys compete. It's exciting to see them you push each other in the meeting room, on the practice field, and everything that they're doing. And we got a couple of young quarterbacks we started four quarterbacks last year in a mm-hmm. 9-game season. So there was a challenge when it came to that, but it also provided guys an opportunity like Tate Rodemaker him and Chubba Purdy that got experience and now get to see, you know, a guy that's done it with McKenzie, that's in that room and helping kind of, feed off of his leadership and example. So, I'm excited about the room. I'm excited about, the competition as we go into the fall, but, I really like where we are with our quarterback position.
Well, Coach, how will you determine who will be the starting quarterback for this upcoming season? It's safe to say both guys have experience. It's safe to say both guys are playmakers, explosive quarterbacks, leadership qualities as well. But the winner of that quarterback competition will do what the best for you? What are you looking for, looking from those guys throughout camp?
Well, you know, you look at efficiency, execution, guys, that the explosiveness of what we bring. And it really has, it's going to, a lot of it's going to play to the strengths of our team and what we have around them. And, because when you step on the field as a quarterback, you've got to make 10 guys around you better. And that's the role and responsibility. And, I feel very confident in the guys that we have in that room. You look at what McKenzie and Jordan, what they've done, as well as those young quarterbacks. I mean, it's this is an offense that's built for playmakers. And so, we're going to identify throughout this fall camp, building off what we did in the spring, and see how these guys have grown throughout the summer. Who's going to be the most efficient, effective, mm-hmm. and explosive quarterback that can help our football team be put in a position to win games, and obviously the ultimate goal is scoring points.
Coach, do you believe in playing two quarterbacks? Let's say you pick one guy and he is the guy going forward. He's the starter for week one against Notre Dame. But will you implement another body in at the quarterback position? Or are you just going to pick one guy and just ride with him?
This is an offense that's built for playmakers. And I say that because, man, we're going to put our playmakers in a position to make plays. And whether that is, if we have to be creative in how we do that, we're going to play the best 11 guys that we can play in every phase, offense, defense, and special teams. So, we've taken defensive players and put them on the offensive side of the ball. We've done the same thing, in being able to utilize our personnel. So that's something we're always going to, have in the forefront of our mindset, is that, man, it's about putting your guys in a position to win. And that's mm-hmm. what we're going to do.
I can tell you this much, Coach. You talk about putting your guys in position to win. The first sign of a real quality football club is to win on the recruiting trail. And right now, I mean, you're hibachi hot. Florida State is considered one of the hottest teams in the country when it comes to recruiting. The 2022 class is looking like they're going to be a prolific class, not to mention you had a heck of a 2021 class, by the way. I love a few of those guys that you signed, a few studs, a few hidden gems, I think, going to be productive throughout their collegiate career there in Tallahassee. But how did you guys get so hot? I mean, sometimes, you talk about teams that are kind of in the rebuilding process with new staff. They kind of get in the microwave and kind of like – it's a process. I mean, you jumped right on the grill, man. That gas grill was already piping it. And man, you're on fire. But how did that happen?
Well, we spent a lot of time investing in the relationship. And, from the first day that I got here, we started the process of building relationship with coaches, with these prospects, not only in the 21 class, but the 22 class, 23 class, those relationships. I mean, it takes time. And that's something that, I did not foresee not being able to have kids or recruits on campus for 15 months. So it was, when June hit, we were definitely excited about being able to get the face-to-face interaction. But it's about sharing the vision. It's about getting these guys around so they get to truly see and be around our players and hear the stories and how we're implementing that day in and day out. There is no sales pitch to come play at Florida State. You don't need one. You need to present what the reality is going to be, how these guys are going to be taken care of, how they're going to be developed, the standard of how we're going to operate. I tell guys, man, if they don't don't like hard work, do not come here. Right. Because they, you know, if they come here, we are going to work. We are going to push. We're going to develop. And, you know, we expect guys to truly, you know, be passionate about being the best version of them and everything that they do. And, you know, when you have a place like this, this is special. You know, there is a standard of how we operate and an expectation for what's in front of us. But, you know, Florida State, it sells itself on the opportunity. It's up to us to make sure that we're going out and finding the right fit and the right young men that are going to help get this program back to where it deserves to be. And, you know, we've got a lot of excitement on the recruiting trail, but, you know, I can tell you, we're getting the right guys that are coming to be a part of this program.
And you know what, Coach, because of the momentum that you've had when it comes to recruiting, you know, some other coaches might not take so kind to those hot streaks that you're having right now. And there was a coach in the same state. I'm not saying he actually specifically were targeting you with this comment or the University of Florida State University, but Manny Diaz had this to say in June: we're not a high pressure outfit. There's a lot of schools that kind of press the kids to try to commit to get some fake momentum. They can win the recruiting bake-off in the month of June, but just because that's not signing day, we want to be authentic. What do you make of those comments from rival head coach Manny Diaz?
I'll tell you, everybody's got an opinion of where they are and, you know, their current situation. And, you know, we're just going to continue to be true to who we are. And it's about building a relationship, sharing the vision of you know, what we, you know, what we're doing and how we're doing it. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's all I can focus on. I'm not, try not to worry about, you know, what's going on at other places, you know, with other situations. And, you know, for us, it's just it's about doing the work and continuing to build the relationships the right way. And you'll bring the best fits here to Florida State.
Well, I can tell you this much, Coach. It seems like Manny Diaz is living in a fishbowl world where he's able to look and see what everybody else doing. And like you said, if you're paying attention to what everybody else doing, you're not paying attention to what you should be doing. So with that being said, I'll say what you probably can't say or you don't want to say. We don't care how you feel, Manny Diaz. What? You're a rival. We don't like you. You don't like us. That's how it's supposed to be. And the first thing you need to do to your rival, you need to beat them on the recruiting trail and then beat them on the football field. So you continue to beat Miami on the recruiting trail like you've been doing, and you're going to handle the rest in late November, if I'm not mistaken. So I'll say what you probably don't want to say, but hats off to you guys because you've done a real good job. And talking about recruiting, yo, Coach, man, you got a stud committed to this 2022 class. Me and Pat P were top ranked corners when we came out of high school. You know, I'm the senior of the group, and then they had me 247 Sports. They had me ranked number 10 out of the highest rated corners ever since, you know, they came up with that composite ranking scale or whatever it is. I feel some type of way, Coach, because, you know, I didn't have the resources some of these kids have to go to all these different camps to really showcase how good I was. So I kind of had to get mine from the mud, but they had me number 10. They had Pat P number 7, and I looked at a number 1 guy from 247, the highest ranked corner ever, is Florida State commit Travis Hunter, class of 2022. They also have him ranked the number 1 wide receiver for the 2022 class as well. What makes him so special? And just talk about the relationship you have with him.
Brian, you know I cannot talk about any 22 recruit.
I'm sorry.
That might be committed to us. So I will not talk about any specific individual, but I will say I'm very excited about the class that we have and the type of young men that and the playmakers that we have that we're going after in the 22 and 23 you know, classes and beyond. So you know, you try to get me with the NCAA.
I got fired up. Hey, Coach, my bad about that. But I can tell you this much: I told 247 they did me wrong because I'm ranked too low. I can't be number 10. Like, I mean, like number 10. Like, really? Like,
well, they got. I'll say this: if any corner that we recruit that you, right, man, if they're on the same list as you, I'm feeling pretty good about it. So, hey, that's you did yours. I promise you that.
I can tell you this much. Of course, he's a commit. But, you know, seeing Florida State have two representatives on that list, the only other school that had two representatives on that list was LSU, I think, with Stingley and Pat P. So, you know, they always had that conversation floating around the football world, college football, DBU, DBU, DBU. Man, Florida State has been known to be DBU since the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and so on and so forth. So, hey, that's a conversation for debate. But I can tell you this much, the kid can go. So we're going to just leave it at that. I know you can't say too much about him, but the kid can go, and I can't wait to see him in that garden and go. But one thing you can talk about, Coach, I believe you can. I don't know what the rules and regulations are. The transfer portal. You've done a real good job in identifying certain players that fit what you're trying to do, what you're trying to build there in Tallahassee, not just on the offensive end. We talked about Mackenzie Milton, but you've done a great job, you know, getting some transfers on the defensive end as well. How do you approach and balance bringing in transfers versus high school kids?
Well, you know, this year was unique. I mean, with the dead period and the lack of evaluation opportunities that we had, you know, with the 21 class, you know, it's presented a challenge. And so we ended up signing 15 high school players. You know, interesting enough that five of those guys that we signed actually played for former Seminoles and guys that were their coaches that had had a great understanding of who these young men were, but also how they would fit into our program. And, you know, and then you look back to our team and the needs that we had. We were the youngest team in all of college football last year.
Yeah.
I mean, our young players, you know, they got experience. But, you know, when it comes to the leadership and you know, the guys that are in that locker room that can tell them and kind of show them the ropes of what it is to be productive. I mean, we brought in, you know, I think it's sitting there 10, 11, 12 transfers, mm-hmm. over 300 games of college football experience that has now been added into our roster. And once again, you know, we weren't going to lower the standard. Each one of these guys that we brought in were the right fit for Florida State. They were guys that are passionate about not only their individual experience that they're going to have, but who they get to do it with and to be a part of this team, to be a part of this university and what we represent. And that's what has me as excited as anything else, because these guys are great leaders and great teammates. And, you know, they were able to gel. Most of them were here for the spring semester, seeing them gel together. It's been incredible to watch, but really excited about what that group is bringing to bring the experience and production along with the youth that we have that's continuing to develop.
And my hats off to you and your staff, because most of the guys that you guys added, transfers, not most of all, they had the pick of the litter and what university they wanted to go to, what staff they wanted to be coached by. They decided to be coached by you and your staff. So that tells me you guys know what to say and how to get these kids to buy into what you're selling. And that's a great, great method to have when it comes to building championship like programs on the collegiate field. And not surprised to see the success, as I talked about, on the recruiting trail as well, because the same things that you're selling and you're telling these kids that are experienced transfers is doing the same things to their parents and to players that are high school prospects. So you guys are definitely clicking on all cylinders. Real last question before we transition to the superlative part of the show, Coach. With the new news from the NCAA that released, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago with the NIL, players being able to capitalize off their name, image, and likeness, we've seen some huge, huge opportunities for these players off the football field. Nick Saban, who we had on the show some months ago, just mentioned that Bryce Young is going to see around $1 million. He's yet to start one game for Alabama. But how do you, as a coach, knowing that this is a new territory for everybody involved, plan on being able to keep everything in perspective with some of these players? Because, you know, you were once a collegiate athlete. I was as well. And seeing some of these opportunities these players may have, it could be easy for them to get a bit distracted and lose focus. But how do you plan on keeping everybody dialed in?
Well, you know, first off, I'm excited at the opportunity that our student athletes are getting to be able to benefit off their name, image, and likeness, and to be able to have deals like that to help throughout the collegiate experience. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I tell our guys, it's, you know, you have the choice. This is your business. What do you want to invest your time in? Yes, there are going to be deals that are going to fit, you know, the profile of what you want to do and what you want to accomplish. But, you know, anything that's going to pull you away from continuing to develop you as a player, as a young man, as a student, as a student on your journey of where you're trying to go, you know, that's where you've got to be, you know, wise and to be able to manage your time to the best uses of what you're trying to do. Because at the end of the day, you know, these guys, the opportunity that's in front of them, you know, as a player, as a person, you know, developing to be the man that they're going to be. I mean, it's exciting. And, you know, I don't want to see guys that get distracted because they're trying to do almost too much to where they miss out on the opportunity to grow, to be the best player that they can possibly be, to be able to achieve the dreams of, you know, being the highest draft pick, to be able to have the NFL success, to be able to set themselves up as a college graduate so that they can have that education that's going to always be with them, you know, rather than settling for something that in the short term that, you know, might not have that same lasting impact. But, you know, I'm excited for our players and the opportunities that they're provided and, you know, the things that they are receiving to be able to help throughout this journey.
No question. I think it's up to $1 million in sponsorships for Bryce Young. So, hey, it is what it is. I'm happy for the kids because for such a long time, they have not been able to make any money based on their skill sets on and off the football field. So it's a plus. But like you said, you have to keep everything in perspective. Coach, I know you handle a lot of pressure as a player, as a coach. So now we're going to transition to the superlative part of our show. I want your honest, unbiased answer. First question for you. Favorite part in being the head coach for Florida State, what's the best part in being the head coach of Florida State?
It's the people, the people that I get to impact each and every day, the relationships that I built with the former players and who I represent. I mean, it is special when you get to build those relationships. There's nothing like it. And to see the type of men that have come before me, it is, I truly think that is the greatest thing about the job that I have and the responsibility that I have.
Who do you hate more? Miami or Florida?
I've got to pick one.
You got to pick one. Who do you hate more?
I tell you what, I haven't got to coach or in against either of them yet. So I'm excited about both opportunities. I can tell you that.
Okay, so I guess it's safe to say they're on the same level when it comes to hate. So who would win? And coach, you know, you played wide receivers, but I want to know who would win in a foot race. Norvell, Mike Norvell, Manny Diaz, or Dan Mullen?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good about myself in this one.
So if you're first, who comes second? Who comes dead last?
Oh, I don't have the scouting report on that one.
You can just look at the body stature and probably pick who probably come dead last. Dan Mullen better be the one who come dead last. I hope Manny Diaz don't let Dan Mullen beat him in a foot race. Come on. But I know I'll take you as well. I'll take you first because of your football pedigree, wide receiver pedigree, and you're still in pretty good shape, coach. So you better win that one. When you look at the offseason training, spring practices you guys were able to get through, leading up to summer camp, who's probably been the biggest surprise when you look at your roster? You're like, wow, this guy's actually, you know, better than I thought, or he's just been so consistent on his job, doing a great job. You're so excited about him this upcoming season. Who's been his biggest surprise player so far based on what you've seen throughout offseason training and spring football?
Well, you know, I think just the overall development, a guy like Amari Gaynor, who is maybe not saying a surprise, but you know, because last year Amari had a lot of flash plays and he was productive in what he did, but just, you know, his continued investment in learning the defense and in getting the finer details, you know, his flexibility and versatility of what he does, he's a guy I'm really excited about, and just be able to see that him take that next step in his game, and all the things that we're going to ask him to do, really excited about him on the defense. Offensive side. And then, you know, Jayshon Corbin on the offensive side, you know, coming on, you know, Jayshon played, you know, he was an Iron Man for us last year. You know, he played, practiced, I think he was in every single practice last year. Didn't miss anything. You coming off of a pretty catastrophic injury there.
That hamstring.
Yes, absolutely. And seeing him kind of get that burst back and, you're just the worker that he is, a tremendous teammate, you know, a guy that I think is positioned himself to have a real breakout year, you know, along with the other backs that we have. I'm excited about that, about him and that group.
Okay, last question for you, coach. We're going to let you go. We know you got ACC Media Day coming up on Thursday. Matter of fact, this is your first media day because everything was canceled. So I know you're excited about that opportunity as well. But the last question I have for you, and I need an answer. I know you can't hit me with a slant and go on this one. You got to hit me with that straight slant and face the pressure from that Will Backer that might try to drill you. Growing up a Florida State fan, you talked about the license plate 1993. So I know you watched a lot of Florida State football. Give me your Florida State Mount Rushmore.
Oh, Lord.
You got to run that slant, coach. You can't hit me with a slant and go. You got to run the slant. I need your Florida State Mount Rushmore.
I mean, that is... I mean, how do you, I can't put four to it. Let me just tell you.
No, Cole, it's a 2 minute situation. We got to score 7 points. We got to score a touchdown, coach. I need your best 2 minute plays for this drive. ACC championship game is on the line. We got to go. We got to score 7 points. This pressure. I need your Florida State Mount Rushmore.
You've got some of the greatest players to ever play the game that have been a part of this program. I don't know if I think I'm gonna have to go slant and go on you because I know if I name four, I'm gonna have a laundry list of guys after this.
It's your list.
I know we got three Heisman trophies that are sitting in that lobby right now.
So you got three Heisman Trophy winners.
I will tell you that. You very well could have said that there should have been at least a handful more guys on the defensive side of the ball that, you know, I've got some that that I can't mention that are great players due to NCAA recruiting.
Okay.
I'll give you mine. Go ahead. Let me hear the.
Deion Sanders. Ron Simmons. And I got to go quarterback. I'll go Charlie Ward. And that final. I probably got to go Fleet of Peter. I got to go Peter Ward.
I mean, yes. And just to think that you still got Derek Brooks.
Yeah.
You're talking about.
You got Terrell Buckley. You got Brooks. You got Jameis Winston, Chris Wehnke.
Like, it's work done.
Dalvin Cook. Some people say Cook was the best running back. That's what some people say, you know, but.
So that's why I'm glad you have your list. Hey, like I said, my favorite part of this job is who I get to represent. And all those greats, all the guys that, we said there, we got 45 first round draft picks that have come through this program. And I mean, the almost 300 All-Americans. This is a program that, the standard of how we operate, and the thing that is incredible. You can go through that list and all the great players, but who they are as people and what they represent. It's special. And like I said, I'm grateful. I understand the responsibility I have to make sure that we're living up to that standard each and every day and how we operate. And, we are going to get this program back to where it deserves to be. And when we get there, we're going to stay there because of the foundation that we're building. And that's what I'm excited about. And, I'm looking forward to the future.
Well, Coach, you don't have to recruit me, because I already signed with Florida State, but it sounds like you're trying to recruit me all over again. And I see why you got these kids committing, these parents committing to you, because you're saying the right things, and I see the passion coming out you. But you don't have to recruit me all over again. But if you want to, I can probably give you a few snaps here or there, especially in the red zone.
Hey, we'll take the reps.
Hey, but listen, Coach, it's been an honor having you join me here. All Things Covered, Patrick Peterson, Brian McFadden. Quality conversation with head coach of Florida State, Mike Norvell, getting ready for this upcoming season. College football is right around the corner. I smell the grass, and that grass smells so good. He's getting ready for his first legit media obligation, media day for the ACC. Will take place in Charlotte, North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, this upcoming Thursday. Coach, man, it's an honor joining me here. Wish you nothing but success. You don't need to say good luck, because when you prepare, you don't need luck. Everything else will follow in suit for what you get ready to do. So wish you nothing but success, a healthy, healthy season this year, and go Noles.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian. Go Noles.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.